HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
To be determined.
Republican nominee Donald Trump's new campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, saying that about Trump's plan as of now for what to do with millions of illegal immigrants in the country. She speaks to CNN a day after Trump meets with his Hispanic Advisory Council.
We need a, quote, fair and, quote, humane way of dealing with what is estimated to be about 11 million illegal immigrants in this country.
Some saying it sounds like Trump may be softening his stance on forced deportation of illegals. However, Conway says,
nothing was said yesterday that differs from what Mr. Trump has said previously.
President Obama's 16-day Martha's Vineyard vacations come to an end. The president now back at the White House. Tomorrow he'll be visiting flood-ravaged Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where at least 13 people have died in recent flooding. This is USA Radio News.
Hey everybody, singer-songwriter Brett Watts here. If you're like me, always on the go, and don't have time to stay as healthy as we would like by eating all the right foods, well, I found an incredibly simple and easy way to get all my fruits and vegetables at once. It's called Daily Lift, L-I-F-T. It's a superfoods energy drink mix supplement that fills the gaps between what you eat and what you don't always have time to eat. This unique formula is packed with 16-plus fruits and vegetables and 59 superfoods, no MSG or GMO. It's all natural and organic, nature's best combination of antibiotics, enzymes, probiotics, and beneficial algaes in one powdered drink mix. Comes in two flavors, mint and berry, and both delicious. Daily Lift nutrients help balance your body's pH levels and boost your energy naturally. And it's safe for kids. So let's fire up that immune system and stay focused. Go to www.onedailylift.com. That's one, O-N-E, dailylift.com. Onedailylift.com, and let's get healthy.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County. Good afternoon. The weather this afternoon is going to be sunny with a high near 81. Northwest winds around 13 miles an hour with gusts as high as 23 miles an hour. Tonight it will be clear with a low around 53, north winds 3 to 8 miles an hour. Tuesday will be sunny with a high near 82, calm winds becoming west around 6 miles an hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night will be clear with a low around 56, light southwest winds. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 86, calm winds becoming south 5 to 7 miles an hour in the afternoon. And Wednesday night will be mostly clear with a low around 61. And it doesn't look like we're going to get much precipitation between now and the weekend, so that's good. We had enough. Well, actually, we do need more, but, you know, it's still. It could wait a week and have come again. This is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, the host of Mental Health Matters. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no paid staff. We have no office. We work out of our houses. And we try to help people who have someone in their family or know of someone or work with someone or close friends with someone who has a mental health issue. And we do this in a couple different ways. We run support groups where families or people can come and meet with other people who have either gone through the same thing or are going through the same thing and talk about it and help each other out or give each other ideas. We also are going to start a family-to-family class again, the fall family. We just finished one and before the summer, and now we're going to start one in September 22nd. It's in Flemington, 52 East Main Street, and it'll be from 7 to 9:30. And it runs for 12 weeks. You do have to register, but it is totally free. All the materials and everything are free. So if you'd like to register or you want to call and find out more about it, the phone number to call to find out more about it is the NAMI line. It's 908-284-0500. And that's not manned 24/7, but we do have a nice young woman who checks it twice a day. And we'll get back to us or let us know, and we can call you back or whatever. But we promise we'll be back within 12 hours of receiving your call. We are very privileged today to have with us Colleen Duer. Did I say the last name right?
You did.
Okay. That's a plus. Yeah. And I believe she's still the development director for Family Promise.
She is.
Okay. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, Larry.
I know that Family Promise was once known as Interfaith Hospitality.
That's correct.
I know you told me one time, because I want to mention that it's been exactly 14 months, almost to the day, since you were on last time.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, it was June 29th, 15. Yeah, I got it written down because I dug out the old paperwork.
I'm wise, Larry.
Yeah. June 29th, 2015. So it's, you know, just 7 days shy of, you know. That was me. I banged the microphone, so, you know, I'm a little klutzy. Colleen, would you do me a favor and just briefly explain why the name change?
Sure. Well, maybe it would help if I just talked a little bit about what Family Promise is and what we do. And,
that's fine.
And then that might make more sense for folks.
Sure.
Family Promise is Hunterdon County's only homeless shelter for families. And the way our program works is that it was based on, as you said, the Interfaith Hospitality Network model, which is something that was started by a woman named Karen Olson in Summit, New Jersey. Karen had seen a real need for a homeless shelter in her community, in her county, and was just thwarted for various reasons on you know, formulating a traditional homeless shelter. And at that time, there had been other models of using congregations, because if you think about faith communities, they often have classroom space, office space, meeting room space that sits idle, sometimes 6 days a week. So she thought, well, why not utilize that and turn that into space for families? And so that's where the Interfaith Hospitality Network program was born. And that was back in the late 80s. And Hunterdon County, I'm proud to say, was one of the very first affiliates on board. So we now have 200 affiliates across the country. And we were one of the first ones on board. So it's been over 25 years. We changed the name back in 2012 because at the request of the national network, because they started realizing that, one, there was an often a misunderstanding that Interfaith Hospitality Network was a religious-based organization. Okay. We are not. We mobilize the faith community. We utilize the space and the volunteer efforts of the faith community, but we are absolutely not a religious-based organization. Not only are we working with faiths of all denominations, but we welcome people from the community at large. You do not have to be a member of a congregation to volunteer or be a part of or support the organization. And so they wanted to change that name for that reason. But the bigger reason is that we found that we were doing more than homeless shelter. And certainly in Hunterdon County, we're doing a lot more than just shelter. And so they wanted to change the name that represented something more comprehensive than Interfaith Hospitality Network, and so they changed the name to Family Promise.
Okay. I know that there's various churches that still house folks who are homeless and going. I noticed, like, you know, there's a couple around. I know my wife goes to for her Methodist church in Clinton she goes to and supports, you know, makes food and stuff for them and so on and so forth.
Thank her for that.
Yeah. But, you know, it's I think it's interesting. And you know, I understand that it's in our county. It's a little tough because, you know, the general population of Hunterdon County, I don't believe realizes, and I know for a fact a lot of them don't, that there's a large homelessness situation in our county. And, you know, all they hear is how wealthy Hunterdon is and yada, yada. But they don't realize that not everybody in this county is wealthy. I don't know what I'm doing in it, but I'll tell you the truth. But, you know, but seriously, it just, you know, I know that I said to somebody one time, not too awful long ago, and they said something about, oh, there's, you know, homelessness, blah, blah, blah. And I says, you don't think that's true, huh? No. I said, well, you know where Walmart is? I said, well, walk behind Walmart and you'll see a railroad track. Go across the railroad track and go down the side and you'll see all sorts of tents. You know what that is? That's the homeless people in their tents because they have no place else to go.
And I'm guessing that most of them are men. And
there is a couple couples I know that are there, husband and wife.
And I think that's important that you bring that up because as I started off saying, we are a homeless shelter for families.
Right.
Our policy is that we will also take single women if we have space available. There is no homeless shelter in our county for single men.
I know.
So we house in motels thanks to Hunterdon Helpline, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the best we have in Hunterdon County for single men. Apparently, I'm told there was one years and years ago, but there is no longer. So that's an unfortunate real gap in our county right now. And people are surprised that there is a homeless shelter. And that, as a matter of fact, what do you know? There are homeless people in our county. But I think part of the misconception comes from the fact that our homeless population in Hunterdon, first of all, is lower relative to our county than it would be in Camden County or Essex County,
right,
for sure.
But they have a bigger population also.
Much bigger population. But part of it is that our homelessness doesn't look the way it does in an urban environment. You are not necessarily seeing that tent city because you're not driving back through that area. You're not seeing traditional street homeless or, you know, beggars that you would see in a more urban environment. Our homelessness takes a different look, and that is an invisible one because our folks are coming from different situations. More often than not, they're doubled up with family, which is at the very least uncomfortable and at the very worst potentially illegal. They are self-paying at motels, which is extraordinarily expensive, even at $50 a night. Do the math.
Sure.
How quickly can you go through your savings doing that? They might, in some cases,
that's
be sleeping.
If you can get one for $50 a night.
Right, and where you're taking your family, you know, that you got to think about those factors too.
Sure.
Some may be sleeping in cars, so you're not necessarily going to see homelessness the way that you would in a more urban environment. And so, if it's not visible, it doesn't exist, right?
Right. Of course. Your shelter program you mentioned, would you elaborate a little bit about that?
Sure. So just on a day-to-day practical level, what happens is we have a day center in Main Street just above the preschool at the Flemington Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where our office space is. That's where our sort of hangout space is, if you will, for our families. And it's also where they receive all of their services, all of their case management services, and everything that they need. They arrive there at about 7 a.m., our office is open from 7 to 5, and then about 5 o'clock, the link comes and picks up our families and drives them to the host congregation. We have 14 host congregations. In addition to that, we have 31 support congregations who help staff the host congregations because there's a lot of houses of worship that want to be involved but don't have the space to be a host, so they will certainly help out, which we are so grateful for. So,
because you have somebody stay overnight, right?
Yes. So it is completely staffed by volunteers. Our actual shelter site is 100% staffed by volunteers. Mm-hmm. So when they arrive at 5 or 5:30 in the afternoon, there's usually two or three shifts. So in one example, you would have three shifts where you'd have a 5 to 7:30 shift. The volunteers are asked to bring a meal. More often than not, it's a home-cooked meal. It doesn't have to be Our guests love pizza and Chinese takeout. So it's whatever. It's meant to be fellowship. The idea is that it's not a traditional soup kitchen environment where you're serving people. You're sitting and sharing a meal and having
a conversation.
Right,
you're sharing with them, right.
And then you might have a 7:30 to 10 shift, which is where the children are starting to get baths and settle down and that sort of thing. And then there's an overnight shift where volunteers literally do sleep at the church from usually 10 till 7 in the morning when the link comes back at 6:30 in the morning to pick them up and bring them back to our day center. Obviously, if they have their own transportation, they wouldn't necessarily be on the link. That's all worked out separately. But that's on a practical level how our program works. We require two volunteers per shift. One of those volunteers needs to be over 21. So what the beauty of it is, one of the many beauties of it is not only do you have neighbors caring for neighbors. So now, you know, we just talked about how this invisible problem. Well, if you're a volunteer with Family Promise, you can't even suggest that there isn't a homelessness problem.
Right.
So now we have people who are very much in tune with the issue. So that's really, really wonderful. One of the things I love about it is I've been working with the organization for 4 or 5 years now. I've actually been volunteering for at least a dozen with my family. And I've always loved it because it's difficult in our community, in our state, in our country, really, to find volunteer opportunities for young children because we do live in a litigious society. And so oftentimes when you look at a organization, you have to be 12, you have to be 14, you have to be 16, you have to be 18, you have to be 20, whatever it is. My kids were volunteering when my daughter was 5 and my son was 2. And they don't even know what volunteering is. At that point, it was, we're just going to go to church and have dinner with some people.
We're just going to go and have dinner.
You know?
Right, exactly.
And so it wasn't until we would come home that we would say, now, where do you think those kids are going to go tonight? And they'd say, oh, they're going home. And we would be able to explain, no, not so much.
Yeah,
they're not.
You were at their home for
Right,
that, yeah.
Exactly. So I think for them, we tried not to make it a big deal. It certainly wasn't, you know, we weren't pulling this whole, oh, we're going to serve homeless people. You know, we didn't tell them that. It was just, we're going to spend time with people. And so my kids and many kids have been able to grow up knowing that homeless families are just like you and me. There's really no difference. Play is the great equalizer, right? Everybody can do a puzzle or spin or watch a movie or play basketball. So I love that about the program is that it really just does equalize everyone.
How I understand that every now and then you'll get a father with children.
Yes.
No wife.
We have seen more single dads. I wouldn't say, you know, it's not necessarily a huge percentage, but we've seen more over the last couple of years. We've seen several single dads come through.
And that's got to be tough, too.
It has its own challenges.
Yeah, it does, actually, you know. It's like you see the kids see others with moms or whatever, and then, you know, where's my mom, you know, or whatever the case may be, you know.
And it depends on the situation. Every situation is different, regardless of whether it's the mom or the dad. You know, sometimes it's coming from a situation of trauma, and that adds a whole nother level of concern for that family. In some cases, there may or may not have ever been another parent, male or
female.
It's hard to say.
Exactly. You know,
kudos to those parents for just taking this step. We had a former executive director who would tell our families, this is the best thing that could have ever happened to you.
It probably
and her
is,
message
right.
is, you know, we've reached this point in the road where now we can, you know, work with you. And the point I always try to make about our shelter program is it's not just shelter. It's not a traditional shelter. Our goal is long-term stability. So when you come into our program, when Donna does your intake, she's already thinking about how we're going to get you out. Because we want to find housing that you can afford going forward. Super challenging in Huntington County. You and I just talked about that offline.
We did off the air. It's
super
like
challenging.
Brutal.
So we have some tools in place that can certainly help with that. But Donna stays with them for years and years and years. As long as they need help or want help, she's there to occasionally help with our Neighbors in Need Fund, with a car repair, any kind of emergency, because, you know, when you're on a super tight budget and something unexpected pops up, you can't absorb it.
That's true.
And also case management.
Right. You know, it is so true. You know, they're dealing with so much.
It's very stressful.
I mean, yeah, it is. I mean, you're a mother, you know, even without the situation that they're facing raising kids was not the easiest thing you ever did. You know?
Right. And often if you are doing it alone, you don't have that other force to support you
exactly.
and edify what you're,
exactly.
the message you're giving.
You know, and, you know, it's just scary, you know.
I have a lot of respect for these people. I think going into a situation where you are with other families that you don't know and didn't ask to be with, and
right.
a fairly confined space,
right.
Moving from church to church 1 week to the next.
It is moving, 1 week they're at it. Is,
right? Usually is 1 week. Some of our churches like to host 2 weeks in a row, but more often than not, they'll be at one. So they're at Bethlehem Presbyterian Church in Pittstown this week. They'll move on Sunday to the next church. They were at Reddington Reformed last
okay.
week. So they literally move every Sunday.
And that's got to be tough, too.
It is tough. And they do have their space in our day center to store most of their belongings, but they're still toting things around.
Right, right.
You know, I think about now the kids are going back to school. And so when you're getting ready to leave the day center, you've got to be thinking about what are they going to wear? What do they need to bring? Do they have a permission right. slip? Do they have books? Do they have homework? There's... You know, imagine one of our children going in and explaining that, you know, it's happened in the past, explaining to a teacher, I left my homework at the other church. You know, a teacher has to understand what our program is. And if she doesn't, she's thinking, what the heck? You
right.
know, what
yeah.
is that? What are you saying?
Right.
So, yeah, there's just a whole other level of stress. I'm in awe of what these people do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, would you... I know you find part of your job, I believe, if I'm correct, me if I'm wrong, is you try to help them find jobs and
it is
places
part of the,
to live and, you know.
Right. It is part of the program. I mean, we are really a housing agency,
right.
but recognizing that employment is usually critical to that. We don't necessarily in our organization find jobs for them, and I'm glad that you asked that question because the reason we don't is that there are other employment programs in the county.
Penny.
So
okay.
we really do try very hard not to duplicate efforts,
okay.
and we partner with other agencies. There are several, again, I'm going to mention Helpline.
Helpline
sure. is one that's
right.
been a great friend to us and to our clients. That's just an example of an existing program. And so
mm-hmm.
we're going to, and we just recently did tap into Helpline's program for one of our clients to work on job readiness
okay.
and then getting employment. So yes, we absolutely do help our clients access those resources. In some cases, education, more often than not, it's maybe a certificate program, something like home health care, a nurse's assistant, phlebotomy.
Right.
Healthcare seems to be one that, you know, pharmaceutical tech, things
mm-hmm.
like that. If we have someone who's looking to get to that next level, we can certainly do whatever we can. You know, Don is terrific about helping them access scholarship money if it's out there and resources, but always
okay.
encouraging the client to,
right.
to take those
right.
steps on their
right.
own.
Now, you want to speak to the struggles of minimum wage in our illustrious county?
sure, because that's so relevant to what we do. One statistic that's been floating out there for some time now is that 50% of the jobs in our county pay less than $20 an hour.
Right.
I will also share with you the other side of the spectrum because we have a revenue expense problem here. Okay, that's one problem. The other end of the spectrum is that a HUD-defined fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment in our county is $1,578 a month. So you're looking at two-bedroom apartments that are running in the, if you could get one for $1,200, you'd be lucky. More likely, it's going to be $1,400, $1,500 a month. A one-bedroom is going to run you between $1,000 and $1,200 a month. So if you're working minimum wage, and if you're lucky enough to get full-time hours, which is a struggle, I'd like
yep.
to know where we're getting full-time hours because we'd like to recommend our clients for that. You know, you're bringing in, what then, $1,400, $1,500, $1,600 a month? I mean, the math just doesn't work.
Right.
And it's very, very frustrating because we always want to encourage our clients to work. That's,
sure.
That's really the key to their success.
Right.
But they're also just sliding backwards sometimes.
And there's so many organizations, companies, whatever, that won't give them full time.
Right.
Because if they pay them up to 30 hours, then they don't have to give them health benefits or access to health benefits or access to retirement or any of that other jazz. So they don't benefits, not jazz, but benefits.
Yeah.
And so by not giving them the benefits, they cut their hours back to 30
or less,
25 or 20 or
whatever. And so sometimes they'll
get
a second job and, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're a single parent and you're working a job and then you have to get a second job, 9 times out of 10, that second job is at night.
Right, and now we get into another level of issue, which is childcare.
Childcare,
we have very few. There are childcare subsidies available. However, most of our childcare centers in the county charge an excess fee. So, in other words, if it covers 75-80% of what that center costs, that mom dad is responsible for the excess fee, which could be $100 a week. I mean, that's insane. That's just that's a lot of money. And so finding childcare, and that is during regular mommy hours, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So where are, childcare at night, childcare on the weekends? One of the reasons that a lot of people end up homeless is a lack of a support system. And for a lot of different reasons, that support system may not exist. It might exist, but it's incredibly strained. It might just be too far away. So unless you have a support system, I can tell you, personal experience, the only reason I was able to work even part-time when my kids were very little is because I had friends. So we would just swap kids all the time and, have our own little childcare situation. If you don't have that network, that support system, it's a real challenge. And it does get very difficult to work at night or to work on weekends. And it has happened in the past where clients have been told to come in on a Saturday and they can't, and then been told then don't come in Monday. So it's rough.
It is.
It's rough. And then you get into the next level, which is making a bit more money, making that $14, $15, $16 an hour, doing that next level certification. The problem then is you fall off the benefits cliff. And so your food stamps are cut. Your child care subsidy goes away. Harder to get utility assistance if you need it. So, okay, you're making more money, but you're really not.
Right.
And it's just so frustrating because there are – you want to encourage that work ethic.
Sure.
And obviously someone is better off taking the job because ultimately over time, two things are going to happen when you have a young family. One is your childcare costs are only going to go down or diminish completely. And two, when you start getting raises on a base of $14, $15, $16 an hour, it's certainly better than when you're at $10.50.
Right.
So long term, of course, it makes sense, but it's a long, hard road, and you're still so vulnerable to any emergency.
Right. And even, a single person who has issues and such. We were talking prior, like my son. It's the same thing. He has no family, per se. Not no kids or anything like that. But, you go to work, and then they raise your rent.
Right. Wait a second.
It can be very difficult because, like you said, part-time jobs or two jobs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what do you do?
And how do you build anything long-term?
Yeah. Because most of, your second job, part-time job money is going to pay for expenses for, babysitting or whatever the case may be. So it's like, you're batting your head against the wall.
We haven't even talked about transportation.
Right. No. What transportation? There is none in Hunterdon County. Link.
Right.
And that's it.
And we like to use a term at Family Promise with the four legs of the table. And, when I first came to this job, I thought, housing, I'm all about affordable housing. And started to quickly realize the situation is so much more complicated than that. It's the four legs are housing, employment, childcare, and transportation. Because remember, we do deal with families.
Right.
And these are somewhat unique to a suburban environment like ours. And we're not even really suburban. Transportation is less of an issue if you're living in Newark. It's
sure.
a massive issue if you're living out here. It affects where you live, how you live,
where you work, where you can work.
Right. Yeah. So, and I think it's reasonable to think that somebody could work in our county and live in our county. I think that's not a completely crazy thought. However, it is becoming very challenging.
It is, you know. And there's certain areas of the county that have lower income housing, but they're certainly...
Well, that's a great point. We have a client who's living in what is officially dubbed as low income housing. It's a two bedroom apartment. It is lovely. It's small, but it's perfect for her and her two children, and it's $10.95 a month.
Right.
So that's low income housing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but when I think low income housing, I'm thinking
more $500,
$600. Exactly. That is technically defined as low income housing.
Right. And, you know, it's like you shake your head, you know.
Right.
I mean, looking at it from, you know, a different point of view, obviously, because I'm not, you know, we're not homeless and, you know, et cetera. But it's just, when I think of low, like you said, I think $500-$600, you know, but that's like, you know,
and when I
that's
talk
a
about,
dream in this county.
Right.
You know?
When I talk about the rents in the county and I mention the 1578 number, the first reaction of a lot of people is that's my mortgage, or that's more than my mortgage, or that's so close to what I pay for a mortgage. And, you know, granted, that's a lot more complicated because there's equity, you know, you put some money into your house, but it's the one thing that gives people perspective.
Right. And, you know, how many of the families that you help drive or have cars?
That's a good question. I'd have to gut instinct that one, and I would say over half drive. I would say about half have cars. 75% probably have driver's licenses and can drive. I'm going to say about half. And then when I get back to the office, Donna will correct me. We'll see. But that's kind of feels like about right. And we do, and I should mention too that one of the things that we do for our families is we have a car donation program.
Okay.
And we accept vehicles that are in good working order or can be put into good working order relatively inexpensively. I know that's somewhat of a tall order. We do have some funding available for car repair, and we will do whatever we can to get that car road ready if it can be done reasonably. That has made a phenomenal difference for many, many of our clients.
Sure.
It has made the difference between them being able to live and work in the county. Several cases I can point to of people who've been able to go to school because now they can get to RV. I mean, yes, the link now goes to Raritan Valley, but it didn't for a long time.
Right, it didn't for a long time.
It has really changed the lives.
It also goes to Bridgewater Mall now, too.
Right.
You know, where there's jobs may be available.
True. And so it has really changed lives. A lot of our folks, as I mentioned earlier, home health care is a big industry for a lot of our families. And it's a good job for a lot of our families.
Sure.
But guess what you need to be able to go from house to house? Yeah.
Yep.
You need a car.
We've had
two situations in the last year of people who've not been able to work because their car broke down. Now they cannot work at all. No income. So that's how reliant we are on transportation in this county. It's not just to be able to get around or get your kids to places. It really is critical to be able to work. So we have this car donation program, and it's made a phenomenal difference. It's for our shelter clients and our folks that have left the shelter and are working.
Do you find that there's a lot of, or I don't say a lot, but mental health issues with a lot of clients that you have?
Yes. I was writing a grant one day, and I keep mentioning the name Donna. Donna is our director of network services, and she runs the
entire network. Her ears must be ringing.
Yeah. You know? She runs the entire network. She's also been doing case management as part of her job for the last 11 years, so she's incredibly experienced. And as I was writing this grant looking for mental health funding, I said, Donna, what percentage of our families suffer from some kind of mental health issue? And she just kind of chuckled and said, 100. 100%. And she said, you know, Colleen, they come in here with, at the very least, depression and anxiety. You've just declared yourself homeless. You have just brought your family into a homeless shelter. As warm and welcoming and inviting as it is, as much support as you get from the community, home-cooked meals, classrooms turned into bedrooms, welcome mats, all of that, you still have declared yourself homeless. And to a lot of people, that is just the ultimate in anxiety. They also come to the shelter oftentimes with some sort of pre-existing condition. In some cases, we have to call on family counseling, family therapists. And the parents are always willing participants in that. They know that they need help and are willing to take it. And, you know, I actually brought I have to write things down because I forget. But
I write them down and I forget where I put it. You know,
one of the things that I use is a statistic from the National Center on Family Homelessness that says, and I'm just going to quote it directly, homeless mothers are quintessentially stressed and often come from troubled backgrounds, raising children alone without the economic and social buffers that prevent everyday problems from turning into catastrophes is daunting. Violence and traumatic losses are among the most prevalent chronic stresses and strains associated with extreme poverty. Not surprisingly, these women now have three times the rate of PTSD, and about 50% have experienced a major depression since becoming homeless. So that's a national number.
Right.
You know, there's also discussion about the cycle of violence that often impacts these children. Again, these are national numbers, but by age 12, 83% of homeless children have been exposed to at least one serious violent event.
And that has to have an effect on them.
It sure does.
Also, you know, yep. I mean, it's not only the parent. I mean, the parent, you know, could be because they were in a, you know, volatile situation or whatever, but and they now they're not at their house, et cetera, et cetera. But what effect does all this have on the kids?
Oh, well,
you know, and that's the thing, too, you know?
I mean, you're talking about, I mean, here it says, you know, children who witness violence are more likely than those who have not to exhibit frequent aggressive and antisocial behavior, increased fearfulness, mm-hmm. higher level of depression, anxiety, greater acceptance of violence as a means of resolving conflict. And what it doesn't mention is something that we see fairly regularly is bedwetting.
Right.
You know, these kids are, you know, we know as parents that kids see stress, they absorb stress, and it manifests itself with them in ways that you can't necessarily predict.
Right. It's just, you know, you're a parent, wife and I are parents. Parenting can be difficult in quote-unquote normal situations.
Absolutely.
You know. I mean, we've had four, and it's like, you know, what would it, could you speak to being a parent in like a crisis situation that you're,
well,
and also having the parent around volunteering.
And, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up because that is something that we've been working on the last, I guess it's about a year and a half now. Donna put in place a program called Parenting in a Crisis. We loosely call it in the office Parenting in a Fishbowl. Because
okay.
That's what they're doing. You know, it's so challenging. You know, I remember not only do I work there, but I still do volunteer shifts at my church just to support our coordinator because she's amazing. And I remember watching two kids, and one was kind of beaten up on the other kid, and the mom whose kid was getting kind of beat around just kind of quietly picked her child up and moved her. And I looked at that, and I thought the self – restraint that it takes mm-hmm. for her to do that and the decision to not make a big deal of it. And, you know, having to parent, as you said, is very stressful. Having to parent with other parents who have different styles of parenting is very stressful. Having to parent in front of other people with other styles of parenting in front of other people is very stressful. And sometimes when I'm doing a presentation, I'll ask people to raise their hand if they've ever flown with a child. If you've ever been on an airplane with a child. And as good as your kid can be or as bad as your kid can be, remember that feeling. You just feel like everyone is looking at you, everyone's staring, and everyone is judging you.
It was my granddaughter. It wasn't any of my kids.
Okay, but,
you know, but still it was
you
a child.
You know
right.
that feeling. I can't even imagine doing that every single day.
Right.
And so we're so grateful to our volunteers and our coordinators who work so hard to be non-judgmental and to be supportive and to be understanding. And, you know, as I mentioned to you earlier, we're doing this presentation on Bridges Out of Poverty, which is just sort of better understanding that there is a culture of poverty. It's as legitimate a culture as being from New York or Italy or the Midwest.
It is
very cultural. And when we can all kind of understand that, it doesn't excuse things, but it does explain a lot. and it has had a big impact on us. So,
do you find that people you've helped over the years, their children find themselves in similar or same situations?
What an interesting question. We have.
I don't know that you did statistics on it, but I was just curious out of your own personal.
I can think of one case in particular of a mom who came into our shelter who was second generation homeless. She had been in our shelter with her family. Great story, though. She went on to get a certificate in phlebotomy, so she's getting, you know, working on that next level job. We did get her a car. She received a donated car, which allowed her to go to school and get that certificate. And so she's, you know, on the road of hopefully what we hope is breaking that cycle of generational poverty, which is a real tough one.
I would think.
It is.
And I would think that, you know, more so than we care to realize it would be. I mean, just from a outsider's point of view.
Right.
I'm not, you know, stating facts or anything. It just... I'm guessing that you see, you live through that, and if it was in a, you know, violent situation that caused, you know, your parents to leave or, you know, or split or whatever the case may be, and you and your mom, you know, went to shelters and so on and so forth, I could see where it could be a generational type thing. You know?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I certainly can't empathize, but I've seen it, and when you've struggled and, you know, there isn't that support system there to really help you or lift you up, it doesn't get any easier.
No, it doesn't.
You know, I've always been very blessed. I can't imagine there could ever be a day that my parents would move me into a homeless shelter, and we've seen that. So, sure, that's a tough one.
Just boggles my mind.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, I had spent, because of job and everything and all our bills and what have you with four kids, I was on the road a lot. And my wife would be home with the four kids, you know, and, you know.
That's a lot.
That could be stressful, you know. And then when the youngest got into all-day school, then she went back to work for, you know, part-time and then, you know, gradually went back into, you know, full-time work. But it was like, you know, I can't imagine dealing with four kids day in and day out. You know?
Right. And imagine moving them into, you know, a church and, you know,
doing
this in front of everybody. Right. And it's just, it's
like
hard.
Yeah. I would pull my hair out if I had any hair left. But you have a fundraiser coming up, correct?
We do.
Which is real quick. How do you, is it all because of donations that you get everything you do? Or?
So our budget is made up of a lot of different sources of income, which is fortunate. We do have some government funding.
Okay.
But as I like to explain to people, our program and our agency is not dependent on those at all. So when we have the funding, we run those programs. We don't hire additional staff.
Mm-hmm.
And those programs are homeless prevention, which is actually for the entire community, not just families, but anybody who is facing an eviction, who is eligible for the program. These are HUD-funded programs. So there's homeless prevention. There's a rapid rehousing program because HUD, HUD has changed. It's kind of interesting. HUD has changed their tune over the years. There was a time when they wanted to see everything in place before you found housing for someone. So the employment and the children and all that. They've really changed their tune to something what they call housing first. And that model is such that they want to rapidly rehouse anyone who is homeless, get them into housing. Because once you remove that stress of housing, all the other pieces can start to fall
into
place.
Yeah.
So we have those two programs. So if you ever look at our budget, whether we're running those programs or not, we have this, you know, could have a shift of $250,000, depending on where we are in the cycle of that funding. But as I said, our program is not dependent on that. To run our shelter program, we have a series. We have foundation grant funding, corporate funding, matching gifts. Love those. Individual donations. Our congregations are very generous with us, and we're very grateful for that. And then we have two big special events a year. One is our Box City event, which we have in the spring. And the other is...
Would you explain that a little
bit? Sure.
I think I know what it is, but I, you know.
Sure. Would love to see you there next year, Larry. Box City is where it's BYOB. You bring your own box. And you come to Hunter and Central High School on the practice field. And we sleep in a box overnight.
You sleep in a box overnight. Yep. The church I go to, a lot of...
Living Waters?
Living Waters.
They're terrific.
Okay.
We love them.
They went.
They
you know.
Are so great.
Right.
They're so dedicated.
You know, it's just amazing.
Well, it was interesting this year because it's the first year that I've been doing this. I think this is my fifth year of organizing the event. And we had torrential rain right before the event started. We actually delayed the start. We didn't postpone the event because it is rain or shine because, you know, homeless people are...
Homeless.
So it is rain or shine. It did stop raining just before. However, it was very cold, very windy, and very wet that night. So we lost a lot of people. We had a lot of no-shows. So props to the 130 or so people that showed up.
Absolutely.
Because that's outstanding. And we were within, you know, last year we raised, I think, $26,000. This year we're almost 24. So given the... almost half as many people
right.
We raise quite a bit of money. It's a wonderful event because although it is largely teenagers, largely high school kids, it is, we've had families and scout troops and youth groups. And we had a group of women who call themselves the Golden Ladies. The median age was about 72. So it really is an event for everyone, but it's so tied to the cause. You know, it really is just such a great way to raise money and to raise awareness about homelessness. And going back to this year, having this cold and miserable night, I still have this sense of responsibility for the comfort of my people. And I didn't hear a single complaint. I really did not hear anyone complain. The only thing I heard consistently was it was realistic.
It is that.
And I thought, what a treasure these people are. You know, they sleep in a box. It's miserable. And there's no complaints. It's just very sobering for them. And I thought that was
really
pretty cool.
I think it's enlightening, too, because, you know, they realize that people are actually doing this every day.
Right.
They're doing it one day. Okay, the day they did it,
It
rained, it poured, it was cold, it was nasty.
Right.
But homeless people do it every day.
I know. And, you know, as I said in the beginning, this is not what our homeless population looks like. We don't have people sleeping in boxes necessarily in Hunterdon County, or at least it's not common. The point of the event is that you're giving up your comfort for a night.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I got to tell you, they people that come to this event are, they don't just bring their boxes. They build these elaborate complexes and themes. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, they really just make the most of this event. And it honestly is just fun. We have an outdoor movie, weather permitting. We have an outdoor movie. We usually have some entertainment. We do food for dinner and give you something to eat in the morning. And it's great. It starts at 6 o'clock on a Saturday. You're done at 8 o'clock Sunday morning. So it's super compact. It's very cool. That's been a really great fundraiser for us and has grown over time, even despite the slight downtick this year. But I'm considering that a huge success given the circumstances.
Yeah. My wife, when we first got married and came back, I got out of the service and came back, and she says, you know, we ought to go camping. And I looked at her and says, what?
Not your thing?
I just spent over 5 years in the military laying on the ground, sleeping in my, you know, my poncho, crawling through the mud. No, I don't think I'm going to lay on the ground anymore.
So we won't see you at Box City next year. Is that what you're saying?
She says, well, we could always go with a pop-up. I was born and raised in Brooklyn. What do I know about pop-ups or campers? So she took me to it, and we had one ever since.
Oh, it's great.
We still have one. You know, I mean, I don't have to sleep on the ground. And, you know, I can sleep up, you know.
That's right.
You know, and it's got a little stove in it, you know.
Well, I bring my air mattress, truth be told, because I figure once you hit 40, you're allowed to bring an air mattress. So.
Yeah, and when you hit 70, you don't have to go, right?
Right, exactly. You get a pass.
I know they were talking about it at church, and they were just thrilled about it. And
it's fun. It really is a great event, and it's fun. It's so much stress because teenagers do everything at the last minute. But it's worth it because the sentiment there is just I'm just astounded, you know. And every year I say to these, you know, no shenanigans. And we don't, because the people who are there, you know, if you're going to do something stupid, you're not going to raise money, sleep in a box. You know, you're not going to go to that much work. So we get the cream of the crop in terms of participants at of all ages. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. So.
Dumb question. Where did they get these boxes from?
Wherever you can get, I mean, a lot of people will go to Lowe's or Home Depot, Rogers Appliance. Sometimes I'll go dumpster diving out the back there. sometimes my husband's company I can get them from. This year I actually, I feel like a cop out, but then I don't know why I'm apologizing. I had to do a panel discussion the next day and so had to have somewhat of my wits about me. So I crawled into the back of my car at 3:15 in the morning and slept for 2 hours. Which was the most sleep I've ever gotten at Box City. But
oh, really?
Then I thought, well, that is realistic. A lot of people do sleep in their cars.
Yeah,
but,
that's true, too.
I just, you know, I was doing security, so I couldn't really be bothered with a box and everything else. So.
I just was, you know, when you said Box City, I'm thinking, that sounds like what they were just talking about not too long ago.
Yeah, it's a great event. I'm really, really, I hope that one continues. You know, it may have a lifespan, but as of right now, we're still going strong.
Well, it's I tell you, the people from our church who went, they loved it. You know, they had a great time and, you know.
Yep, despite everything.
Yeah, you know, our pastor speaks nothing but praise of you guys,
great.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got a fundraiser.
Yes, we have a fundraiser coming up on October 22nd. It's called Home Sweet Home, and it is at Grape Finale Hands-On Winery. And if you've never been there, it is a cool place.
Where is it?
It is on Bartles Corner Road in the Industrial Park, so kind of over by the Polytech.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
It's a cool place. You can make your own wine there, crush your own grapes and bottle and label your own wine. We are actually this year doing that. The wine is already made. We're going to be bottling it that night and selling bottles for $25 in honor of our 25th anniversary. So it's a really fun place. We're going to just do, you know, appetizers, and you'll have the opportunity to sample wines from Grape Finale, which are very, very good. Several are award-winning wines. And we'll have some entertainment. And it's just a great opportunity to gather in a fun, different location. Mm-hmm. For some time and to thank our volunteers. We're honoring one of our longtime board members, Judy Stodoff, this year. She's an amazing individual, and she's given so much over the years to our families and to our program. So I'm looking forward to the opportunity to honor Judy and just to gather to say thanks to our volunteers and our coordinators and everybody who makes this program happen.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's the 22nd?
Mm-hmm. Saturday the 22nd.
October.
Yep, 6 p.m.
And it's going to be where?
Grape Finale Hands-On Winery on Bartles Corner Road in Flemington.
Okay. That's down by Polytech.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
So
you can order
tickets and pre-order your bottle of Petit Sirah that we'll be bottling that night online on our website, which is familypromisehc.org.
Okay. Now, if someone wanted to, well, let's say someone who's homeless how would they apply for help from you guys?
So they could call our main number. Well, we have just the one number, 908-782-2490, and ask to speak to Donna about being in the shelter program if they needed shelter. We are also screening for those homeless prevention programs. However, the funding for that is pretty much coming to an end. We have applied for a new round of funding, so...
That's a grant?
It's a grant. Yeah. And so, but, you know, it's always worth calling to be screened to see if there's any availability. But for the shelter program, really to talk to Donna about getting on the wait list. Right now we are full, hoping that we will have an opening in September. But with rents the way they are, we can't count on it.
And what was that phone number if they wanted to call?
908-782-2490.
And what about the website you said?
It's www.familypromisehc.org, as in
all one word.
Yep.
Right.
Family Promise HC.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You have generational poverty.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the issues with that in the last 5 minutes or so? We have less than 5 minutes, about 4 minutes.
Well, I think what it comes down to more than anything is that sort of mindset that's so ingrained of living day to day, and the concept of planning for the future, of working to get a job that leads to the next job, that maybe goes to an education, that builds savings, that building equity, long-term savings, long-term health care. I mean, it's just it's often as foreign as someone trying to tell me, just live day to day. Just, you know, just take it one day at a time. You know, that's not what was how I was raised or what I was taught. So I can't, that stresses me out is, you know, the idea of living day to day. I wouldn't know how to do that. I wouldn't be comfortable doing that. And I think it's the same thing in a culture of poverty where the concept of, and I think there's this misunderstanding that if you just get a job, you'll be okay. And that's not the case. As we've talked about over the last hour, it certainly does set you on the right path, but it has all those other complications of childcare and transportation and housing that come with it. And so I think that's that day-to-day thing is a real struggle. Planning, meeting appointments, calendaring, those are not concepts that are necessarily taught in every house.
And so, you know, it's like with people who I've dealt with been over the last 19 years. That, you know, they'll say, oh, pull yourself up. Go get a job. Get out of the house.
Oh, the bootstraps.
You know,
Yeah. Well, sometimes you can't find your bootstraps.
Well, you know, it's – and a lot of times, you know, it's not that the person doesn't want to get up or doesn't want to go get a job or doesn't want to get out of bed. It's because a lot of times they can't at that particular time. And, you know, it's just – it's through lack of understanding, you know. Oh, your grandfather did this. He wasn't homeless, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. We're not his grandfather, you know, or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the situation is a little different than it was then, you know, so on and so forth. But it's just.
But that actually is an interesting point because, you know, I think back to my grandfather who was a funeral director and like his father before him. And that also meant that you were, you know, the town therapist and doctor and, you know, my grandmother cooked dinner for everybody. But those were communities that you supported each other. Okay. So when one was down, the other one would, you know.
Right.
And this is what happens in a culture of poverty, too, is although there isn't necessarily the support system that's going to take care of your children so that you can go to work, what happens is this sort of, well, I have a little bit extra. Larry needs money. Okay, I'll help out Larry because I know in a couple of weeks I'm going to need money. Larry's going to help me out.
Right.
And so that plays into the whole day-to-day thing. You know, why do you build? Why would you build savings? Like, there's what's the point? You know, because I'm down. I know I'm going to be down in a month. I know that some emergency is going to happen, and I'm going to need help. So I'm going to go to Larry, and then when Larry needs help, he's going to come to me.
Right.
So it's an interesting dynamic that happens. That although the support system isn't there to help stabilize a family, it certainly is there in the sense of this sort of. Always helping out the other guy. And I think that goes back to, you know, that was generational for my grandfather. You know, you could count on your neighbor to help you because it was up and down.
Right.
And
I can't believe the hours flew by already. Colleen, I really thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It won't be 14 months the next time. Okay.
Sounds good.
Promise you will come back before.
Okay.
And I just, you know, anything that NAMI can do.
Good to know.
Just reach out.
Okay.
Okay? You have my number, I hope.
Yep,
and if
I
you
do.
Don't, you know, I'll give it to you. You know, but seriously, if anything we can do, you know, or can help with something, let us know.
Okay. Great.
Okay?
Thanks, Larry.
All right, Colleen, thank you. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you again next week. Same time, same station.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterton Medical Center. Hunterton Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterton Healthcare.